NDR Info. Nachtclub.
Am Mikrofon ist Paul Baskerville. Nun das Thurston Moore Special. Es gab zwischen 1983 und 2009 15 Sonic Youth Alben. Die Band hat sich nie offiziell aufgelöst. Seit der Trennung des Ehepaars Kim Gordon Thurston Moore hat es aber nie wieder ein Sonic Youth Album gegeben. Thurston Moore hatte schon zwei Soloplatten gemacht, als Sonic Youth noch aktiv war, aber hat gerade sein drittes Soloalbum seit seiner Trennung von Kim Gordon veröffentlicht. Das heißt The Best Day, und ich habe mit ihm gesprochen. Hier ist erstmal ein Stück von dem Album The Best Day. Hier ist Speak to the Wild.
Is the longevity something which, in hindsight, it seems like a surprise to you? I mean, if you go right back to really your first days in New York, I mean, did you expect to have this kind of long career, or were you just did you just take it day by day at the time?
No, of course not. You don't see it from one day to the next. Your ambitions don't go beyond the following weekend. That doesn't happen until you're kind of, I think, well into your 30s or something, where you start thinking about the idea that you better start getting serious about what you're doing, because there's only so much time that you have to do it. And I never thought about, like, what I wanted to accomplish. Like, I wanted to get a band together, and I want this band to last forever. I mean, to me, the model for a band lasting a long time was The Who. Everybody talked about The Who, like the longest band, running band, or the Rolling Stones as well. So I never thought about that either until at some point into the 90s, where it's like, well, Sonic Youth have been together for, you know, 10 years, and then 15 years, and then 20 years. You know, we wouldn't break up. The band that wouldn't break up, or, you know, which was very unusual in our line of business. I mean, bands don't stay together for more than, you know, 5 years plus, you know, because they're little family units, and they become dysfunctional and temperamental. And, you know, we went through a lot of different psychological phases together, you know. I mean, the fact that there was a married couple in the band that, you know, that became somewhat of a bit of a power dynamic in the band just because of that. And so there's a, you know, there's a lot of growing pains, and then, but there's a lot of glory in it as well.
Wenn man jung ist, denkt man gar nicht über die Zukunft nach. Man denkt nicht weiter als das nächste Wochenende, meint Thurston. Erst wenn man weit über 30 ist, fängt man an, alles ernster zu nehmen. Allmählich läuft einem die Zeit davon. Als ich jung war, dachte ich nicht mal darüber nach, was ich erreichen wollte. Es gab ein paar Beispiele von Bands, die ewig zusammen waren. The Who und The Rolling Stones. Aber erst in den 90er Jahren merkte ich, dass es bei Sonic Youth ähnlich verlaufen könnte. Wir waren dann schon 10 Jahre zusammen. Dann waren es plötzlich 15 Jahre, dann 20 Jahre. Wir waren die Band, die sich weigerte, sich zu trennen. Es war schon ungewöhnlich. Die meisten Gruppen schaffen es nicht länger als 5 Jahre zusammen zu bleiben. Bands sind wie Familien. Sie werden launisch, sie zerbrechen und gehen auseinander. Wir haben viele unterschiedliche psychologische Phasen zusammen durchgemacht. Es gab ein Ehepaar in der Band. Kim und ich sorgten für eine besondere Machtdynamik. Wir hatten zwar Wachstumsschmerzen bei Sonic Youth, aber es gab auch viele Glanzzeiten. Und hier ist jetzt ein altes Stück von Sonic Youth von 1995 von dem Album Washing Machine. Hier ist Because.
But Sonic Youth never, I mean, we never sold a lot of records, so we never really made that much money. We were able to sort of be secure enough where we didn't have to work day jobs, certainly, but that didn't really happen until the very late 80s.
The impression I got, though, when it came down to the creativity of the band, and you've kind of continued that with your solo work, I think, now, is that the band seemed to have like a very natural sense of momentum.
I felt like we had, I think we felt that we had not reached any conclusion to what we were doing, and then we kind of weathered the storms of any kind of personal issues that might have happened in our younger years, and we kind of rode through that and together. And by the time we were well into our 40s and then into our 50s, we were adults, and we felt like, oh, we actually survived this, and now it's like, you know, we can just really sort of reap the benefits of being like these adults in this band, and we're kind of educated and sophisticated people, and we can, you know, we know how to deal with this now. We just be cool with each other. And I think the biggest successful album we had was probably the least recognized album, which was Experimental Jet Set Trash and No Star, only because of its time, you know. And then when that record came out, it kind of was charting, but that was like the weirdest record in that time period. But it just happened to be because of when it came out, and it was after the big Nirvana explosion and everything. And it's just like, oh, you know, people are still buying records, and we were sort of part of this community that was, you know, kind of sellable, but we were still kind of a marginal band. I mean, you know, I think our music was just too difficult to be assimilated into what was being played on rock radio with Red Hot Chili Peppers or Bush or any kind of this grunge mania. Yeah, sure. So our stuff was too strange.
Sonic Youth verkaufte nicht so viele Platten. Also so viel Geld verdienten wir auch wieder nicht. Ende der 80er waren wir aber finanziell ausreichend abgesichert, dass wir nicht nebenbei jobben mussten. Sonic Youth machte immer weiter, weil wir irgendwie zu keinem künstlerischen Endergebnis gekommen waren. Wir haben in jungen Jahren einige Krisen gut gemeinsam überstanden. Als wir dann alle 40 plus waren und dann irgendwann sogar über 50 Jahre alt waren, waren wir schon richtig erwachsen und wir dachten, wir haben überlebt, also können wir nun unseren Kultstatus genießen. Wir sind gebildete, kultivierte Menschen. Wir werden miteinander cool umgehen. Merkwürdigerweise war das erfolgreichste Album die Platte Experimental Jet Set Trash and No Star 1994. Es war zwar die schrägste Platte, die wir in der Phase gemacht haben, aber sie verkaufte sich gut, weil es die Blütezeit von Nirvana und Grunge war. Wir waren auf einmal marktfähig, aber dennoch blieben wir langfristig eine Randerscheinung. Unsere Musik war doch zu schräg für Rocksender, die sowas wie Red Hot Chili Peppers oder Bush hoch und runter spielten. Und hier ist jetzt ein Stück von dem besagten Album Experimental Jet Set Trash and No Star 1994. Hier ist Sonic Youth mit Bull in the Heather.
And when it comes down to you, do you think that at any time in the past you've actually been willfully difficult and obscure?
I don't think so. I mean, to me, it's like I never really thought about what the value would be to go purposefully towards a commercial sound, because I think it would be so such a mistake. I mean, because I never felt like we were technicians for that kind of commercial industry anyway. I mean, for me, it's like my ambitions were always towards like to be accepted for what we do, and we eventually were, and then anything after that was just kind of curious. And then I think when the more sort of professional world got involved with us, like management and record labels, and they were like, well, you guys, if you really focus, you can become the next Pink Floyd, because that's the kind of band you could be. And I was like, I love Pink Floyd, but I don't want to be Pink Floyd. I'd rather be the Germs. You know, I mean, I want to be, you know, it's just like, that was sort of like how I felt. It's like, I'd rather be in, you know, I want to be in like a radical, like anarchist punk rock band. I don't want to be in like an arena rock space band. I mean, I was like, I don't want to be anything except for who we are.
Ich habe mir nie Gedanken darüber gemacht, ob es Sinn gemacht hätte, ganz bewusst einen kommerziellen Sound anzustreben. Es hätte nicht zu uns gepasst. Wir hätten nie solche Dienstleister sein können. Mein einziges Ziel war es, einen Anspruch auf Echtheit zu erheben. Die kritische Anerkennung bekamen wir schließlich. Das Management und das Label erzählten uns, wenn ihr das richtig anstellt, könntet ihr die nächste Pink Floyd werden. Ich liebe Pink Floyd, aber ich möchte nicht Pink Floyd sein. Ich wäre lieber eine anarchistische Punkband wie The Germs, aber letztendlich wollten wir Sonic Youth sein. Und hier ist jetzt Sonic Youth von dem Album Rather Ripped 2006 mit Rena.
What I always thought was quite fascinating how long some of the songs were. Yeah. The punk spirit, but actually quite self-indulgent at times almost. And it's almost kind of like a punk version of Deep Purple or something.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I guess so. I mean, to me, it was just, yeah, I mean, you know, it was, a lot of it was informed, not so much by like, you know, like Deep Purple, like Made in Japan, which is a record that, you know, is very close to my heart. And so there's some truth there. But it was more an interest in long form music. I mean, you know, be it like with, you know, certainly like avant-garde jazz recordings that we would hear where, you know, they would be sidelong sort of excursions on a theme, you know, it's like, or Sun Ra or something like this. And to me, that was really what informed us as far as like, you know, defying sort of like the, whatever the populist stance is on length in like a punk rock song, and still being, and, you know, and still sort of claiming sort of like the punk ethic. So, I mean, that to me was what that was all about. I was more interested in what was going on in, like, you know, the lineage of, like, free improvisation music, knowing that there's this music that has arcs and journeys and sort of this experience of players sort of listening and regarding each other in each one's own unique sort of, you know, sophistication. That was really instrumental to my thinking as far as a musician, and like okay, how do I employ that into what we are as a, like, a post-punk band? Like, you know, how do I bring that in without it being too pretentious? Or
wasn't Glenn Branca a role model as well, wasn't he?
Well, again, certainly people like Glenn Branca, yeah, who were doing long-form music with, yeah, like, you know, like guitars that were sort of amped very loudly, and, you know, that was very influential. So being in New York in the late 70s, early 80s, there was people like Glenn Branca who were working in that form anyway. So the idea of, like, working in sort of long-form composition, it still really attracts me.
Deep Purple's album Made in Japan bedeutet mir in der Tat sehr viel. Also bin ich bestimmt davon geprägt worden. Aber es ging bei uns darum, dass wir uns grundsätzlich für Long-Form-Musik interessiert haben, für Avantgarde-Jazz. Künstler wie Sun Ra waren unsere Vorbilder. Das widersprach der konventionellen Denkweise der Zeit. Die Punk-Ethik herrschte noch überall, nämlich die Idee, dass man kurz und bündig sein musste. Improvisierte Musik fanden wir spannend. Da geht man auf eine künstlerische Reise. Es ist Musik wie eine Berg- und Talfahrt. Ich wollte Bestandteile der Avantgarde-Musik in der Post-Punk-Musik mit einbeziehen, ohne prätentiös zu erscheinen. Ende der 70er gab es Künstler wie Glenn Branca in New York City, die Long-Form-Gitarrenmusik gemacht haben. Er war ein großer Einfluss auf uns. Ich fühle mich immer noch zu Long-Form-Kompositionen sehr hingezogen. Und hier ist jetzt Deep Purple mit Highway Star von dem Album Made in Japan 1972.
The last project I did was this really instant kind of Dada kind of thing of, like, making a really amped record, and I called it Chelsea Light Moving, and I didn't put my name on it, and it was this idea of anonymity. And but when I stopped it, I kind of didn't take the guitar out of the case for a few months. I mean, I just kind of wanted to create, like, some kind of distance from the activity I was doing. And what I would do in the interim was I would do different things, where I mostly just play live improv gigs with different kinds of musicians, Casper Brodsman or John Zorn, or just to get my mind off my own sort of songwriting kind of ideas, and wanting to have a distance, a little bit of remove from it. And then the time would come that I knew that at some point I would sit down again and start doing that, and, like, looking at, like, what my feelings are, what my language is, or, like, you know, how I want to sort of present, like, new songs.
Das letzte Projekt, das ich machte, Chelsea Light Moving, war ein dadaistisches Konzept. Mein Name tauchte nicht mal auf dem Cover auf. Ich wollte anonym dabei bleiben. Nachdem ich das Album fertiggestellt habe, nahm ich meine Gitarre für mehrere Monate nicht mal aus ihrem Koffer. Ich wollte Abstand von mir selbst bekommen. Eine Zeit lang habe ich dann nur Improvisationskonzerte mit Typen wie Casper Brötzmann und John Zorn gemacht. Ich denke, die Abwechslung war nötig, damit ich von meinen normalen Songwriter-Ideen eine gesunde Distanz bekam. Ich wusste, dass der Zeitpunkt wieder kommen würde, wenn meine Gefühle es zulassen würden, dass ich ein normales Album mit Songs wieder machen würde. Hier ist jetzt Chelsea Light Moving mit Heaven Metal.
What I do as a songwriter, what I do as a guitar player is you know, it's figured out. People decoded it. They, you know, I've been around for a while, so they're like, oh, that sounds like Sonic Youth. It's like, well, of course.
Well, it is Sonic Youth.
It is Sonic Youth. I mean, it's that's how I write. Yeah. And I'm not going to pretend that I don't write any other way, but I do.
So you're not trying to not sound like Sonic Youth,
but I do
make
have
a solo.
I have to like it. You know, I'm not just going to do something like, well, this is classic Sonic Youth style here, is people are going to dig this. I never do that. It's like, it has to be something that, like, it has to interest me when I'm playing. It's like, oh, that's kind of cool. I'm going to, like, investigate this a little bit. And sometimes it takes a long time. Sometimes it all of a sudden it's something that happens like that. And Lee and Kim are, you know, key, of course,
yeah, but,
to, like, Sonic Youth.
Yeah, but the part of it is definitely still identifiable as being...
as me.
Yeah, inevitably. Yeah. But it sounds like a more intimate version of it in a way. It sounds like a songwriter version of Sonic Youth in some way.
Yeah, that's makes total sense. Yeah. Of course it would. Yeah, and I understand that. But you know, it's to me, it's like it's all about, you know, employing the right people to sort of, you know, make it interesting. And certainly, I think this guitar player, James Edwards, was like somebody who was really unlike Lee Ranaldo, but he was kind of a great guitar player in his own way. This young guy, James Edwards. And I just, you know, I thought he was perfectly suited for this this project. And then he's the one who recommended Deb Gouge from My Bloody Valentine because they were friends. London has been really welcoming to me, you know, which has been great. Like when I came there, it's just like, you know, it was like after like a very sort of you know, very disturbing period in my personal life, and it's just like coming to London, I just felt like, oh God. You know, I just really want to sort of, you know, keep my head down a little bit. And people were just so welcoming and, like, we're so happy you're here. Like, this is so cool that you're here. Like, you know, and then I started getting all these emails and letters like, oh, come see this band, come here, do this. And I was like, it's been great. And I live in this nice little neighborhood that everybody's really friendly. And it's been quite a nice place to live.
Die Leute haben schon längst kapiert, was ich als Songwriter und Gitarrist so drauf habe. Ich bin schon seit einer Weile dabei. Wenn sie meine Soloarbeit hören, dann sagen sie alle, das klingt wie Sonic Youth. Ist es auch gewissermaßen. Aber ich muss meine neue Arbeit selbst mögen. Sie muss mich auch anregen. Ich würde nicht irgendwas veröffentlichen und dabei denken, Hauptsache klingt es wie Sonic Youth. Lee und Kim sind gar nicht mehr bei meiner Soloarbeit vertreten. Die Elemente des Sonic Youth Sounds fallen schon mal weg. Der zweite Gitarrist auf der neuen Platte, James Edwards, klingt ganz anders als Lee Ranaldo. Er ist aber auf seine Weise ein hervorragender Gitarrist. Er war derjenige, der Deb Gouge von My Bloody Valentine als Bassistin empfohlen hat, weil sie befreundet waren. Das Album entstand in London. Ich fühle mich in London gut aufgehoben. Ich bin nach einer sehr auffühlenden Phase in meinem Privatleben dahingezogen. In London wollte ich mich ein bisschen verkriechen. Die Leute in London waren so freundlich zu mir und sagten, wir sind froh, dass du hier bist. Es ist so cool, dich in London zu haben. Ich wurde mit E-Mails zugeschüttet und bekam Einladungen jeglicher Art. Ich wohne in einem total netten Viertel. Und hier ist das Titelstück von dem neuen Soloalbum von Thurston Moore. Hier ist The Best Day.
You know, things work circumstantially. I mean, there was no great sort of method or plan about like making this record. It turned out the way it turned out, and I like that kind of activity. Like the title was different, the cover was different. It was more darker and a little more sort of sinister. It was called Detonation. It was about, you know, it was trying to sort of convey this vibe of like, you know, anarchism and activism and sort of, you know, this kind of smash the state kind of emotion, you know, idea, and like, and putting a personal patina on it in a way and having fun with that. And like, and then I changed the entire thing and I just said, let's have a really simple sort of blissful, positive kind of
changing my completely.
And I put this picture of my mother when she was 20 years old, you know, like falling in love with my father, and these like images of the two of them. And that's the cover, and it's called The Best Day. And I wanted to be like, oh, let's make it... Things are so disturbed right now all over the place in the world. I was like, let's present something that's really kind of... that has a quality of love and sweetness. And you know, but we can still investigate melancholy here, but let's put this on.
Das Album ergab sich einfach. Es gab keinen großen, durchstrukturierten Plan. Es hätte auch anders werden können. Ursprünglich hatte ich einen anderen Albumtitel. Es sollte Detonation heißen. Das Cover sollte düster sein. Ich wollte Anarchismus und Aktivismus vermitteln. Die Platte sollte ein »Lasst uns den Staat zertrümmern«-Feeling haben. Aber dann änderte ich meine Meinung komplett. Auf einmal wollte ich ein einfaches, positives, glückseliges Konzept haben. Auf dem Cover ist nun ein Bild von meiner Mutter, als sie 20 war, als sie sich in meinem Vater verliebte. Das Album heißt einfach The Best Day, der schönste Tag. Die Weltpolitik ist momentan dermaßen beunruhigend. Als Gegenreaktion wollte ich eine Platte machen, die Liebe und Anmut vermittelt. Das heißt nicht, dass Melancholie gar nicht auf der Platte erforscht wird, aber nicht in erster Linie. Und hier ist jetzt Forevermore von dem Album The Best Day von Thurston Moore.
Yeah, there is something quite comfortable sounding about it, in a positive sense.
Yeah.
You know, it's a, yeah. I think it's a, something a bit restrained, a bit relaxed about it. You don't sound unnecessarily agitated, you know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. kind of, it sounds like you're at peace with the world on the album, I think, too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm okay. you know, things could be better, things could be worse, you know. It's like anybody in their mid-50s life, you know, it's just like, what are you going to do? I mean,
can't turn the clock back. No.
Yeah, we do the best we can and we get through, like, our, you know, like, you know, everybody has their good days and their bad days, but I wanted to make a record that was called The Best Day.
You know, because, the next one's going to be called The Worst Day.
The worst day will be the lost album. Like, the worst day.
Yeah.
I always wanted to do a live record called The Worst Gig Ever, because I would hear people come up to somebody in a band and go like, oh, I saw you play at this gig last year. I was in the singer of the band go like, oh my God, that was the worst gig ever. Like, you know, just like so defeating, like. And I would hear that a lot, like, oh, that was our worst gig ever. And I remember the last time I saw My Bloody Valentine, and I went backstage and I was talking to Kevin Shields, and I was like, man, that was really cool, man. That was really amazing. It was one of their first reunion gigs. And he was like, oh, Thurston, that was the worst gig ever. You know? And I was like, oh, I keep hearing this from you guys. Like, because I say it too to people. Like, they're like, oh, I saw you play at this festival. I was like, oh, the worst gig.
Yeah, well, if people are a bit self-effacing. Yeah, it's so critical. That's right.
So I wanted to do I always wanted to do a live Sonic Youth record with all these really like amazing pieces from all these different live gigs and make a compilation and just call it, like, the worst gig ever.
That sounds a cool idea. People are biting on that, I'm sure.
Mir geht es schon ganz gut. Es könnte mir besser gehen, aber auch schlechter. So wie es einem so geht, wenn man Mitte 50 ist. Man tut sein Bestes. Ich habe gute und schlechte Tage. Aber ich wollte eben eine Platte machen, die Den besten Tag hieß. Das Album, das ich irgendwann Den schlechtesten Tag nennen werde, wird das Lost Album sein. Das Album, das im Archiv verloren geht. Ich wollte schon immer ein Live-Album machen, das der schlechteste Gig aller Zeiten hieß. Ich habe es oft erlebt, dass jemand auf eine Musiker zugeht und sagt, ich sah euch letztes Jahr live spielen. Und der Musiker sagt dann selbstkritisch, oh nein, das war der schlechteste Gig überhaupt. Kevin Shields von My Bloody Valentine sagte das auch zu mir nach einem Konzert. Ich sagte ihm, Mann, das war ein cooler Gig. Er sagte Thurston, das war der schlechteste Gig. Ich habe sowas auch schon mal gesagt. Ich möchte ein tolles Sonic Youth Live-Album veröffentlichen, das dann The Worst Gig Ever heißt. Hier ist jetzt Sonic Youth mit Pattern Recognition von dem Album Sonic Nurse 2004. Und das war der Nachtclub mit Paul Baskerville mit dem Thurston Moore Special. Und ich wünsche euch eine gute Nacht.
NDR Info Nachrichten.